Welcome to The Art of Growth, where we use the Enneagram and the best tools we can find to help you transform. And welcome to our most epic season ever, as we take a deep dive on the instincts and we go into 27 panel episodes. We are going to hear from every single subtype within each type. So every single self-pres type, sexual type, and social type in all nine types. So 27 episodes of this is the first. So before we launch into the self-pres 8 episode, if you have not taken our instincts test yet at theartofgrowth.org, you can do that now. The most accurate understanding you can have of yourself is when you combine your dominant instinct with your dominant type. And it helps you see yourself more clearly. It actually helps a lot of people figure out their types or realize where they were actually slightly off on the type they thought they were. And we made this because we know it will be helpful to you in understanding your journey and how you show up in the world and why. Why are you so different from someone who has your same Enneagram type number? And so we know this is going to be huge for you. When you go to the website, you can also make sure you are signed up for our newsletter. You'll know about upcoming group coaching sessions, what we're doing, what we're thinking about, and get weekly tips to help you on your journey as well. So you can find out about all of our work at www.theartofgrowth.org. And we could not be more thrilled to launch into the season. Honestly, we've learned a lot. The Enneagram has always been based on self-reporting instead of putting people into boxes. And the self-reporting that we have been experiencing through doing these panels has taught us a ton. So we are just thrilled to bring it to you. It also feels fortuitous to us that we're launching this on the week that we've gotten word we are going to pass 1 million downloads, which is always a great threshold for podcasters. So 1 million thank you to all of you. If you haven't written a review for us yet, please do so. It helps people find the show. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Art of Growth. So now without further ado, let's jump into the Self-Pres 8 episode.
Welcome everybody to the Self-Preservation 8 panel podcast. We're so excited to have each of you, and we're looking at the instincts this season. We're looking at all three, and we're doing that through each type. And there's a reason for that. It's because each type expresses itself through the instinct, and when it does, it appears a little bit different, even from within the type. And so I'm excited about this opportunity to learn a little bit more about the Self-Preservation 8. And so I'd love for you to introduce yourself briefly. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and then we're going to jump right in.
My name's Jill. I live in Surrey, just south of London in England. But my accent is from Glasgow in Scotland, where I was born.
I'm Kathleen, and I am from Seattle, Washington.
And I'm Becky. I am a yoga teacher, mom of 4 human kids and 3 furry kids, and I live in St. Louis, Missouri.
Awesome. Well, let's just dive in and talk about the dominant instinct, which is your self-preservation. And when we're thinking about self-preservation, we're thinking of 3 subcategories: health and wellness. We're looking at the nesting, the home. We're looking at resource management. So both having resources, food, money, house, but also the management of those things. And so I would love to hear a little bit about how you as an 8, and we're going to look at the different features of the 8, the strength and the power of the 8, and how that plays itself out through the self-preservation instinct. And so how does that work? How does that instinct, how does strength show up for you? How does that drive come through when it comes to those 3 categories?
I'm just amazed to find that not only did they finding out that I was an 8 explain an awful lot, but finding out that I'm a self-pres 8 is explaining even more. So I, from the strong, the need to be strong is huge, particularly in my health and well-being. So I've got always been committed to fitness. And I've never understood why it's not associated with competition. It doesn't matter if I'm beating anybody. but I have to push myself and I have to work. I feel like I'm working longevity into my body. That's really what I have in my mind when I'm exercising. Mm. So I work hard in the gym, but I don't really need targets and I don't need anybody to work against.
Hmm. So do you work against, you feel like you're working against your own self? It's like, I want to be stronger than I was before.
Yeah, I want to be as strong when I'm 60 as I was when I was 40. And in my head, it's all about maintaining what I have now as I get older and almost sort of challenging the limits of aging. So yeah, it's a sort of feel like I invest in my body to make it serve me.
Well said.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me because I'm about to turn 60 this year. And I have set a goal to do this hike locally here that I did when I was 20 for the same reasons you just said. I want to show that I'm strong enough to do it. It's a very hard hike. Strong enough to do it. I'm doing my training. I'm lifting weights. And this exact same reasons for the longevity and just to feel like I can take care of myself as I age. So I resonate with that.
Yeah, so I found this aspect of thinking through where self-preservation fits most in my life and with my type to be rather curious, because even though by profession I'm a yoga teacher, so I'm very in tune with the body, regularly going within to see how the body feels, what the body needs, I do not share that drive to push the body. I used to, but the older I get, the less competitive my expression of movement becomes. It's almost become a little more lazy in that it's more regular, it's more frequent, I'm more committed to it, but it's a softer, deeper expression of movement than it was 10 years ago when I was standing on my hands and taking strange pretzel-like shapes. Now it seems like a more, like it's more designed to complement my inner health, my mental health, as it is to improve the body.
Mm, great. Well, let's talk about the next aspect of it, which is resource management. How does the desire to be strong, the however you want to language it, the need to be strong or the being strong play itself out even in this area of resource management? And maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but I'd love to hear from you on that as well.
And I also wonder if this ties into that desire to not be controlled, because I've heard that with some that comes up in this category. So how does that may play into this as well with the eight?
Yeah.
From my perspective, and especially in the resource management area, for me, it's about a need to feel safe. And I have to feel safe. And in order to feel safe, I have to be strong. I have to work hard. I have to make money. That's one of the areas where I really realized I was self-pres, because I was reading somewhere that self-pres people tend to like check their bank accounts all the time. And I do that just, and it's just to like, it's like soothing for me. And it's not like I need to be rich. I just need to know there's money in there. But that's a big part of it. And that makes me feel safe. Mm. And the ability to make that money is part of how I express the strength. And yeah, the other question was not being controlled. Well, that's part of being safe too, because if somebody else is controlling me, then I can't protect myself. So I have to always be ready to defend myself. I mean, I'm just talking stereotypically here. I'm trying to change these things and be more aware and not have these, you know, reactive behaviors. But that's the source of it for me, is really wanting to be safe, and I'll do whatever I need to keep myself protected, fed, clothed, and housed.
That's interesting, because for me, the emphasis is much more about being ready. I want to be ready, and I want to plan ahead. I want to protect my time. I don't really like the unexpected. I don't like surprises, really. And I put enormous effort into planning, preparing, predicting what output is going to be required and making sure that I'm ready and that I've got a balance, home life, work life, that things get the time that they need and that I avoid wasting resource. So in my work, I'm often the one that's saying, but do we really have the resource for this? Do we have the time for this? Do we have the energy for this to do it well? I'd rather not do it at all than do it badly. So for me, my diary is king. I hate, let's evolve as we go. Just absolutely, it's the bits. I want to plan it, know what's required, be ready.
Yeah, I love that. That really, be you know, between what you, Kathleen, said and then you, Jill, is like that, the predictability, the routine, the what you can expect. Like if you're resourced, you have enough, check in the bank account, you've got, it's that like guardedness, the guarding of the self, the guarding of the space. So even the thought about like energy, whereas some other eights don't always think about the energy that they're having to guard. A self-preservation eight might have more attention to that. That's interesting.
I chuckled a little bit when Jill was talking about the importance of her diary. For me, some of the most dreaded words of the in the English language are, let's just wing it. That sends me into a little bit of the, you know, case of the shivers, because I don't wing it very well. I need to know what's coming up, who's doing what, when we're going to be done, what we'll do after that. So I'm the kind of person when it comes time to make some vacation plans, I literally make a chart. I make a spreadsheet. Yeah. I know how many miles we're driving every day. I know what rest stops we're stopping at. I've already made hotel reservations in advance for every night. When I think about resources, I think a lot about the example of COVID. I mean, just as background, I'm the product of two insurance agents. In my prior work life pre-yoga, I worked in strategic communications, and that involved a lot of scenario planning, you know, sort of if this comes up, then here's how we'll handle that. And I'm like a Boy Scout, man. I am ready. Mm. I am always prepared. I'm ready for everything. So in the winter, I carry around my winter box, my tote box that has the de-icer and the extra socks and the gloves and the Snickers bar and the bottle of water. It's a little, I've learned to recognize that not everybody else operates this way. And so it really sets me apart. It's unique. But like when COVID hit and everybody was concerned about not having enough toilet paper, I'm thinking, well, I've already got 40 rolls of toilet paper just for a regular week.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. You know?
So I still have down in my basement from COVID cases of bottled water, cans of spaghetti sauce. We had a whole bin of food that we never really needed to go through because grocery delivery came up. But I was prepared for the apocalypse.
Well, I was just going to say, if this is a zombie apocalypse, I'm hanging out with you, self-pres aids, man.
Perfect.
You are the true survivalist of the world.
Well, I just like to say, I find this interesting because I don't feel that way. I mean, we're all self-pres eights, but it's interesting how it presents differently because I like winging it. When I go on vacation, I like just knowing where we're going to land. And then we rent bikes and we ride our bikes and I make the Airbnb reservations the same day. So I've read that people, you know, there are those different aspects of the instincts. And I can see right here that we each have our own place where we're more dominant in within the instinct itself. So that's...
Yes.
Interesting.
Very well said. And I'm glad you brought that up, Kathleen. This is what it's why there is no absolute in any of this. But what's interesting is that if other self-pres people, not just eights, are listening to this, they're echoing with a lot of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. There's this attention to in what way am I prepared? In what way am I anticipating what's coming around the corner? Not in the same way as a head type would, but in the planning to be prepared for what may come around. So like, I love that, you know, Boy Scout analogy. I think it's a perfect one for self-pres. So yeah, really good.
Yeah, I have another comment on the resource management. There are things that I'm really good at, the ones I talked about, but there are other things like, you know, maintenance of the house. that are important to me, but I'm just not good at them. And when I'm on my second marriage now, and when I met my husband, my now husband, he's also self-pres. He's a self-pres one, but he is really good at the aspects of self-pres that I'm not. And so I really augured in on the self-pres. Like, that was really important to me, clearly, because I picked someone with the attributes within self-pres that I myself don't have. And instead of like picking someone who's strong in social or sexual. So that was another way sort of doubling down. And I really needed to feel safe within my self-pres.
That's interesting. I'm married to a social seven. And I wonder if it would have been easier to find someone that was self-pres, because he and I just like, oh, for example, he shops. And I've got this super rigid way of, I have a 6-week menu because I need to be able to feed my children with a really balanced diet, but I hate deciding what to cook. So I've got 6 weeks of different meals. And so I make a list of everything I need for the week. I then go through all the cupboards and take off everything I've already got, because I hate waste. I hate buying things we don't need. I hate throwing food away. And Phil just loves to go around the supermarket and buy things he's never seen before. Every week we're empty. We've been married for 30 years. I empty the shop and think, what is that? And when are we going to eat it? Do we like it? And is it waste? And
oh, man.
Fascinating.
I feel for you. I feel for you.
I think you should feel for him.
I do that to people, so I'm definitely aware of my impact with that sort of spontaneity. But this is a good comparison between how the self-preservation instinct will clash against not just type, but against, and not always clash, but there's, you can feel the tension of like where the self-preservation attention goes versus where the, say, social attention goes or the sexual attention goes. And so that does play itself out in relationships quite a bit, as well as the workplace in any setting. So it's really good. Well, let's talk about the third, the home, the nest.
I feel like Becky should probably lead off with this one just because of what I already know about her.
Oh, let's hear this.
So this is the area that I feel most deeply, not just in my bones, but in the cells of the marrow of my bones. And Joel, you were saying how this is, you know, how our self-presness, our self-presosity can sort of bump up against not just other types, but other instincts. I find that it really bumps up against children. And so I live in a pretty small home with my little blended family. My husband, we each bring two children into our marriage. And so we've got, between the four of them, we've got a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, and two 13-year-olds. And I have a great deep need for order, for knowing where everything is, for there not to be socks and soccer balls and candy bar wrappers all over the floor. My children do not share this need. And it creates an awful lot of conflict. Whereas, you know, I said to my husband recently, I'm like, how can we come up with a way that I can step back from nagging and yet still get my priorities achieved? And we both sort of scratched our head with that, because we recognize the kids just don't share that sense of home and nest and order. And they really thrive in the mess and the chaos, and they're the first ones to say, let's wing it. Whereas I've got a cleaning schedule to go for the whole week. And I think they think I'm a little nuts, and I might be.
Oh, I think we are. We are slightly nuts.
But in a good way.
Yeah. I think one of the most extreme examples of my home thing is when the children were 5 and 6, we decided to move to central Brazil. We lived in a place called Goiânia for 6 years. And it was a huge risk. And if it wasn't for my social seven husband, I would never have gone. But one of the things we did was pack up our house and put all our possessions that would go through the hole in the roof into our loft. And I made an Excel spreadsheet of 67 boxes and the contents of every single one. And
wow.
Yeah. And the number of people I've told that, and they just look at me like, how could you do that? But I needed to know what we had and where it was. And it paid off because we came home at Christmas time a couple of times a week to find our boots. And I could say, ah, box 43 has got Harry's boots in it. We could find our winter jackets. But yeah, that's like the extremity of it. The order, I love that, Becky. I need the order, and the order to me makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
That's why I've got a 6-week menu, because then I know how many times we're eating red meat. I know how many times we're eating white meat. I know how many times we're eating carbs, and cycling through the carbs so that we don't eat potatoes 3 nights a week. All those kind of things are, to me, it saves time, it saves energy, and yeah. It's healthy.
Yeah. I mean, you just demonstrated literally all three aspects under the self-pres about well-being, resource management, and the home and domestic life. It's like, yes, the home and domestic life, you're really attending to that, but you're doing that with practical know-how. And you're also using that practical know-how and managing of resources in order to make sure that the well-being is met through the food. And so you're really seeing how all of those tie together. And you're in charge of this too. So it's not like you're letting this be handled by someone else. Like You're handling all three, and it is up to you, and you are in charge. I love it. It's just, that's a great example of the combination there.
Yeah. That's what I was hoping to hear like a little bit more of, is that aspect of how does the eight feeling like control is coming externally at you? Like things are trying to control you. Is this part of the mechanism for you to feel more in control of your environment, of your space?
So, Jill, just following up on what you were saying and what Joel was asking about our need to control, and yet the eight has a distinct need to not be controlled by others. As you were describing the 6-week menu and, you know, when we eat red meat and when we eat chicken, I was thinking, I was really resisting, like, oh, nobody could have. I see why you would want to make that menu for you, but you could not make it for me. You know what I mean? Like that would be controlling me. And I initially, I mean, just right away brushed up against that. Like, oh, don't you tell me what I can eat.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, as I say, I've been married 30 years to a 7, and Phil loves variety. So there's had to be flexibility. So he'll look at the menu as, well, it may be Tuesday, but I fancy cooking what's on Thursday. And I fancy cooking it a bit differently too. And so he'll start into the larder and pull out what he wants. And in fact, when I can tell it's boring, I don't get bored by rhythm and routine, but other people get a bit bored. I lean on him. I say, Phil, we need a little bit of excitement. So I delete, you know, 10 of the meals, and he heads off to the recipe books and online and finds new recipes and finds it. So I lean on his love of all that, you know. Yeah. But home's okay, because I am in control at home. You know, we can do things as we like at home, but it's outside of home that, I get triggered in work settings and friendship settings if I think I'm being pushed around, or I don't have the freedom to say no.
Definitely. Yeah, for me in the home area, I experience it more. I just need to have a home. It's funny, I keep on saying I need to feel safe. Safe is a big thing for me. I need to have a home, but the rest of it, as long as I have a home and it's, you know, maintained and it's in good shape, that's enough for me. I don't experience, at least in this domain, this need for, certainly my husband would say, I don't need all the order. And I think in other areas, I have a way, my own way of like scheduling. A lot of it is with my workouts, you know, wanting to make sure that I'm always fit and in shape, or at least trying to get there. And then also for me, it's a lot about connection with other people. So I have 2 kids and 6 grandkids and my mom. And so I'm always kind of looking to make sure I've touched in with everybody. I don't know which part of self-pres that is, but it feels like a very important part to me of maintaining my relationships and connecting with the people that are important to me.
Yeah, and that sounds a lot like the social instinct. And I wonder if that's
that's my repressed side. So that's why I'm really...
Interesting. Okay.
I kind of struggled with that. I think it's more... I'm not sure. Maybe it's me going to 2. I don't know. But I'm definitely, the social is my blind side, because it's like joining, like this, doing this podcast. I've decided I'm going to try and, you know, go out of my comfort zone to be more social, whatever that means exactly. So when you asked to do this, I was like, oh, I don't know. But I thought, do it, Kathleen, because you're not that comfortable with it. So just do it. And so I'm trying to expand my social sort of joining groups, or it's not one-to-one kind of thing. It's more joining groups, and I'm looking to volunteer and be part of a bigger cause. So it's, to me, that's the social, or maybe I'm misunderstanding.
That's
the
social. Definitely social. Yeah. That's
yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
And the relationships for me, it's about, I need to feel connected. And so it's, for me, it feels like self-press. Like I need to know those people are there. I need to check in on them. It may be going to two. Like I said, I don't really know.
Yeah.
So we've talked about your dominant instinct being the self-preservational one. We refer to the second in your sequence, or your instinctual stack, being your top, your middle, and your lowest. We call the middle one your neutral one. Which one is more neutral for each of you, and how does it function, and does it serve your primary? But how do you feel like you relate to your secondary instinct?
I'll jump into that. My secondary instinct is the sexual instinct. And I actually find it pretty relevant and top of mind for me in both in my work and in my relationships with people, my closest relationships. I really like to cultivate a deeper one-on-one connection with people. I mean, I could be sitting next to you on an airplane, and then, you know, at the end of our hour-long flight, we are best friends who have covered like our deepest traumas over 30 years. And I love that. There's nothing more uncomfortable to me these days than having to suffer through small talk. I want to be able to like look at you right into your soul, and for you to see mine.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very definite sexual energy there. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, so this is a strange one for me, because on the test, I came out 42% social. So that would be my second. Reading the description, that idea of reading people and reading body language and facial expression, that is strong, but it sort of connects with the eight for me, because I hone in a lack of integrity very quickly, and a lack of authenticity is a huge one for me, and I'm ready to get into the protecting, you know, back off from this is danger zone here. So it comes in there. But if I'm at a party, I'm like Becky, I don't really want just a series of little snippets of small talk. I would far prefer to have a really decent conversation with somebody. And yet that, I think the one-to-one sexual is supposed to be my third instinct. But I also, maybe the social, there's something about team, because I'm a minister of a Baptist church. I work in a team, and I work in a lot of teams. And I love team. I love team care. And that kind of checking in on everybody, making sure there's fairness, that there's respect. And I love to lead teams. And I tend to think more team if I'm leading the team. I think I can be a bit of a pain in the neck as a member of a team, but I like to lead. And I know that's a bit more social, isn't it? And there's a big bit of contribution to others is what I am. That's what my work is all about. So that feels maybe why I got the social with my second one.
Oh. And do you feel your self-pres instinct? Do you feel some of that coming into the space of the social?
Well, in work, that's the diary is the pinch point there. So I can give myself, and I can give myself absolutely wholeheartedly. And there's a lot of altruism in there. There's a lot of stuff about the importance of community and exhorting people to be all they can be. And I'm a speaker. That's sort of what I do, mostly what I love to do. But there is a pinch point. Mm-hmm. There's a point at which I have given what I had, and I had time that doesn't belong to anyone else. It's mine and my family's. And I think unhelpfully rigid when I get there.
Yeah.
Because the tank's empty.
Yeah.
I need to retreat.
Yeah. That's the intelligence of the instinct. It knows. It knows when the gas is running out before it runs out. So yeah. That's great.
Yeah, my secondary is sexual. And as I said earlier, I'm pretty sure my blind side is the social. I think the sexual plays out. I feel very similarly. I love having really deep conversations. I can do small talk, but I just kind of feel like, what's the point? Why are we doing this? You know, but I'll do it if I have to. I've learned that that's the way you've got to do things. But I much prefer, like, at a party to find somebody and sit in a corner and, you know, find out what's really going on. But also, I think there's an energy that I get because as a self-press, I can be kind of a little bit lower energy than maybe some of the other eights. But sometimes I just want to party. And I feel like that comes in, you know, and also maybe at work, I'll get a really good idea and I just want to make that happen. And I feel like that sort of creative and sort of joyful part of me comes from that sexual instinct.
Yeah.
And then the social, yeah, for me, it's about joining groups is I think where I really have a hard time. And I am very heavily self-preservation, I would say. It's not very balanced. And I'm trying right now to get more balance and trying to figure out how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for segueing us into that. The neglected center and the problems it causes you. So if you want to add to that, that's one of the big questions that we're asking everyone as we do these panels is how has it created some problems for you? And then what way are you learning to grow through it?
Well, you know, I didn't even realize until I started very recently reading about the instincts and understanding them better that I really get afraid when I'm in a group. Like Joel, we met at this Enneagram intensive. And I remember there was another woman there who was a self-pres 8. And she told me, Kathleen, you look afraid. And I said, I am afraid. Wow. I didn't understand that that was because when I'm in a group, I mean, part of it is being an 8 and always feeling like maybe I'm going to be too much or say the wrong thing or, you know, whatever. But it's more than that. It's afraid of being in a group and then maybe I'll, you know, or maybe I'll try to lead when I shouldn't lead and all that stuff that comes up. But I'm learning that I'm just trying to join more groups, to be honest, right now. I'm trying to, I have, you know, a lot of, I want to volunteer. So I've reached out in ways where before I thought about it and then I would just get blocked and I wouldn't reach out. And now I'm saying, you know, go beyond the block, reach out. And I'm just kind of sampling different things where I can find out where I need to grow in this area. But that's how it is for me.
Love it.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. Okay. I love that because what you just demonstrated there is the desire. It's really more about integration than balance. Like it's not, because they're not always going to be equal. Like you have a strength for self-pres and that will be a strength that you're able to carry. But you do want to integrate these other energies. And I think the way you talked about saying, well, this is the one that's not as strong for me, and this is what I'm doing about it. I'm taking a practical step to put myself in social situations is just huge because that's exactly what it looks like to go into integration. It's to say, I'm going to take this step. And Joel always talks about like doing what you want all the time, what really feels good to your type. It's like scratching the mosquito bite. And when you don't scratch it, it just doesn't feel right. And that's how you know you're doing the right thing. And so I'm sure it feels sometimes awkward for you, but the fact that you're doing it is just such a beautiful demonstration of growth.
Yeah. I echo that 100%. And then I would just add the detail of, I can see how you move the, like you said, sexual is your second. Like you're leveraging the sexual energy of risk-taking to then go put yourself into the social, which is brilliant. I mean, that's
good. Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. That's helpful.
Really good.
I must admit, I just felt ill as I read the description of the sexual. It just makes me feel ill. The idea of breaking a habit. I read it with my husband actually, and he just roared with laughter. And he said, Gillian, your habits, routines, and boundaries have got barbed wire on them. They're like, they are so protected.
Yeah.
So to avoiding risk, it just seems to be the way I live. And actually living in Brazil, that was a major stressor for me. It was a huge, I moved there with no language. I had no Portuguese. I had 5 words of Portuguese. My children were 5 and 6. We took them to a school where no one could speak English. And I felt way out of control, long way out of control. Actually, having him there was the thing that just kept me stable, and having a front door that I could close at the end of the day and But yeah, loads of these things, when they're trying new things. Phil, laughing earlier, he said it took him 10 years to persuade me to buy a dishwasher. Because I just thought, you can wash them manually. What's wrong with you? You don't need a machine. Yeah. I've been using the same face cream for 32 years. That was my sport. I ran, and I ran marathons until I had injuries. And it took the injuries for somebody eventually to say to me, you're doing the same exercise all the time. You have to change and do different exercise.
Wow.
And it took the injury to make me do it. And my babies, wow. that was having babies. Yeah. It breaks every routine and pattern you've got. And I got postnatal depression because I couldn't cope. It was a huge stress. I couldn't cope with it.
Yeah.
So I have no idea how to integrate my sexual.
Yeah, but you did. So yeah. So a couple things. One of them is the need for, or you know, the meal plan that you have, where you do this, you know, you've got it all worked out. And that you call on your husband to say, hey, can we mix it up a little bit?
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to mix it up, right? That's bringing a little bit of the sexual energy, even if it's not internal for you. That's fine. You're recognizing the need for it and you're calling for it. Mm. And it changes things up a little bit for you. Mm. And you also illustrate another point that I think is really important. And that is self-preservation. Whenever our dominant instinct is just running and it's the thing that's driving everything, it actually lowers the intelligence of that instinct. It starts to counteract the intelligence of that. So for example, when you said you're running marathons regularly over and over again, the self-preservation instinct is about making sure that you live longevity, right? That there's longevity, that there's health, that there's strength.
Yeah.
But it lacks a certain level of intelligence because mm-hmm. it keeps doing the same thing over, which eventually produces injury. And so the sexual energy comes in to say, hey, you change that up a little bit, you'll have longer, you'll be able to run longer.
Yeah.
And so it's those little tweaks like that. Like I like the way Jim put it. It's not about having perfect balance between all three. It's about how they're integrated. And my theory is that the other two tend to want to serve. You know, if they had a personality, they would desire to serve the dominant instinct and contribute to it to make it even that much more impactful in your life. But you have brought in some of the sexual energy, I think. And you could probably go from your self-pres to your social and see how the social can help you. Even my husband, I go out to him to bring in a little bit of the sexual energy and that path, that route. So, yeah.
Thank you. That's good.
As I was thinking through the social aspect of my instincts, it actually led me to a question for you, Joel and Jim. So maybe I'll throw the question out there. I'll say a little bit and then maybe you could answer the question. I'm wondering if the instinct stack is relatively static throughout your life, or are there seasons to it? Are there waves to it where, you know, at some period you might draw on something, you know, on perhaps your neglected instinct for a period of years? And I'll tell you what gets to my question. So social was what scored lowest for me, although still relatively high. You know, my numbers were self-pres 77, sexual 69, social 58. So all of my numbers were pretty high. I don't know what that means. But my observation is that if you had asked me to take this survey 10 years ago, I would have expected that I would have scored much higher on a social instinct. Mm. I had always considered myself incredibly outgoing, very social. My social circles ran as wide as they did deep. What I noticed was 7-8 years ago, a couple of big things happened that caused me to sort of bring my circles in closer. One was that I left my corporate career where I'd been at the same PR agency for 12 years. And a lot of my social network was tied up in that work setting. And then the year after that, I started a sobriety journey. And so it's now been, you know, I've been a sober woman for 7 years. And through both of those things, I watched my circle get smaller and smaller and smaller. Some of that, I think, was probably by choice. I think there was a little, especially around sobriety, a little self-preservation instinct rearing its head that just makes you bring the focus pretty tight in. But also that friend circle gets really small. And so as I look at it now, my social instinct is pretty weak. I find that I'm much more comfortable with myself and with my teeny tiny group of confidants. And even in the context of COVID, you know, so many folks have felt isolated and alone. It's been a joy for me to just be in my own little home with my own little self and my little husband and my kids and my pets. I've not wanted for almost anything.
Mm. We can't spend too much time on this. This would be a separate podcast altogether for us to dive in more deeply into it. But just to say, yeah. I think it's a great question. I think it's one that a lot of folks are asking. And it's one that in full disclosure, like we don't have the answers. We have some, but this is about learning and growing with the wisdom that the rest of those who are on this journey are also discovering, right? So there's a lot that we're still learning about the space. I've heard stories like yours many times of folks who are becoming sober or folks who are having significant like growth happening. And they realize they pushed themselves in a direction that wasn't really home base for them. I personally have done so too. I lived out of my self-pres instinct for several years. That's a story for another time. But what I realized is how exhausted I was. I was always tired. I was always wiped out. When I started living more naturally out of my dominant instinct, I found the energy being stronger there. It's a larger conduit of energy that seems to flow through that. And so relaxing into that, but then I'd also find myself pushing that way too much, you know? And then if you push it way too much, you become exhausted by that dominant instinct, and then you need a break from that too. But it's just more natural to flow from that one, my dominant, than it is to flow from something else. And that could be what happened to you. You know, you became sober, you began to grow, and some changes took place. You realized that, you know, it's not really your favorite place to be, and that you're okay not having as much of that in your life. And that's okay too. The problem is when it's neglected. The problem is when we're repressing it. The problem is when it's not integrated. My thinking is that when we allow integration, it starts to teach us greater wisdom of how to live. It's when we're fighting against something that we lose the opportunity that the wisdom of that integration could bring to our lives.
Yeah, there's another aspect of it that I think I'll mention briefly here, which is, let's say your dominant is self-pres and you want a stable home and your well-being to be cared for, but then you start to reach an age where you want to find a mate and your sexual is repressed. You may dial that up and there may be an increased usage of the sexual instinct in order to attract and bond to a mate, but it's still serving the dominant instinct of wanting to have a safe home, have good well-being, a good domestic nest. And so I think we do pull up our repressed instinct at times we need it, but it's usually to serve the dominant instinct.
Very true. Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of humor there for me because of how I see it happen quite a bit in my own life. Mm. Well, this has been great. I so appreciate each of you devoting your time. What I'm aware of with self-preservation instinct is that it requires you like pulling up some of the social and sexual energy just to say yes to being on the podcast. So yeah. Thank you. I really honor that. And I so appreciate you being open and transparent and sharing some of these stories and experiences with us. And so a huge thanks to each of you for being on this podcast.
Yes, thank you guys so much. It's amazing to have you, and we will see you soon.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you are subscribed so that you can keep up with the season. You are going to learn so much about the people you know, the people you love, and you're going to grow in your own self-discovery, even when you're hearing about people who are different from you. That's so helpful. We cannot overstate the importance of that. It gives you a better understanding, how to be more curious in your relationships, how to ask better questions, and how to integrate some of the things you hear from others into yourself. Our personality can be a bit of an exaggeration, and we want to move from that exaggeration to integration. And seeing the lenses through which other people see the world is very helpful in that process. So go to www.theartofgrowth.org to take the instincts test, and you can figure out what your dominant is, as well as your secondary and your repressed or neglected, the one that needs some intentional work. Figuring that out has been really transformational for us, so we know it'll be really helpful and transformational for you as well. Now, may you go in growing awareness of who you are and who you are becoming. May you be expanded and move ever towards the integration of a fully redeemed self. Grace and growth, and stay tuned because the next episode is only a day away.